Welcome to the scorching arena of valor and the crucible of courage. This is the Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Here in the inferno of life's greatest challenges, heroes are shaped and legends are born. Every episode is a torchlight of wisdom, casting a glow on the paths walked by those who've braved the flames and emerged stronger. In this furnace of fortitude, we'll explore tales of resilience, bravery, and the unyielding human spirit. Each guest brings their own spark of insight, lighting up the darkness and guiding us through the smoke of adversity. With Fireman Rob at the helm, prepared to delve into conversations that smolder with significance and stories that kindle the soul. It's not just a podcast, it's a beacon for all who seek to rise from the ashes and glow with purpose. So stoke the fires of your curiosity and ready your heart for tales of triumph and transformation. The flames are roaring. The stage is ablaze. Welcome to the Forged in the Fires podcast. Let the journey begin.
All right, welcome back to Forged in the Fires podcast. I'm your host, Fireman Rob. Today's guest, he is a Hall of Famer for the White House Communications Agency. He has, when I look at his achievements, it is ridiculous. Presidential Service Badge, National Lewis University Reach Awards. There's so many of them, but you know what? Let's just get talking to the gentleman, the man, the myth, the legend, Darrell Williams. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, doing great, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Oh man, it's so awesome to see your story. And I want to go back to where you grew up, because it really is a testament to success, a testament to courage, a testament to just the resilience to be able to get to where you were and where you are now. So I want you to take me back to Compton, California.
Sure, Rob. So I grew up in Compton, California. Those that know the movie Boys in the Hood.
Yeah.
That was actually the environment that I grew up in. And then my two brothers and sister grew up doing the environment of Straight Out of Compton. So I was the oldest out of the group.
Oh, man.
So it was definitely a challenge, right? You have, the gang violence, the drugs. I mean, just trying to make it out of there really was something. You don't think about it back then because you just,
you're in it.
Figure you like everybody else, just trying to make it. But when you look back on it, you're like, man, my life could have went in so many different directions just based on the decisions that I made. And I was just fortunate that I was hanging around a group of guys that most of them, right, had some positive aspirations. A few of them was like, hey, I'm going to do what I need to do to kind of, make that quick money. And I was like, nah, I just don't think that's for me long term. And I'm glad that I didn't.
Right.
And for me, the key professionally was joining the military. I had no intentions on joining the military. I think it was one weekend, my junior year going into my senior year, I ran across a recruiter and I didn't even want to talk to him, Rob. I was trying to like ditch the guy. And he was so good, man. He was like, hold up. Let me just talk to you for a second. He just asked me, what I was going to do after high school. And I think I just made up something like, I don't know, man, going to the University of Arkansas or something. And Rob, the guy pulled out a book.
Yeah.
Opened a page at University of Arkansas, had the price of what an undergraduate degree was and a graduate degree. And it was just one of those aha moments, like, okay, you know what, this is about to get real. Let me listen to this guy. And once he gave me the pitch, right, free college, travel, I'm paid. Like, you know what, right, paid leave, 30 days vacation, I'm like, man, I need to really look at this. And again, one of the best professional decisions I made, because it really launched me to a career like I had no idea was waiting for me. But it was definitely a good decision. And one thing that helped me and I always share with people, it's always good to have mentors around you. I had two really good older cousins. One served in the Army and the Navy for about 2 years. And they got out and they resented the fact that they got out. And When I spoke with them, they were very vulnerable and said, you know, had they done it over again, they would have stayed in because they didn't really come back to as much as they could have received had they stayed in. So the fact that they told me, you know, don't just go in and get a stereo and a car, right? Go in there and really, you know, make a
make
something
sense
out of yourself. And it was really helpful to me.
That's so powerful to hear that kind of story, because I think a lot of people see their circumstances and they say, I can't get out of this. But when you went into the Army, did you foresee, like, what did you think? That was, you're just going to be a grunt for the whole time? Or did you actually kind of go in going, I'm going to make something of myself?
Definitely the second part, Rob. I was like, I'm going to make something of myself, and I have to make something of myself because I got a bunch of guys that's hanging on the block that I used to hang out on saying, yeah, you'll be back. You're too small, 120 pounds. Yeah, we'll be right here waiting for you when you get back, right? So part of me had that chip on my shoulder, really was, I can't disappoint the family. I'm the oldest, right? So everybody's looking up to me. So if I come back, does that give them the reason that they can screw up? You know what I mean? So it's like, if I do this right, who knows what will happen? And luckily, it was really good because actually all three of my siblings ended up joining the military. One of them actually retired. The other two got out. But I know for a fact that, you know, had I not made those right decisions and, you know, reporting back to the family like, hey, you know, life is tough, but it's doable. Again, I don't know what that could have done for them and their future as well. So I definitely had a lot on my shoulder to prove. Not just to myself, but wanting to pave a new way for my family.
That's unbelievable. And then to further all of this, this is what I love, is to further all this, you served with the operational and vice presidential communications officer in the White House communications. That's like 500 people that you were leading for the mission, the White House mission. I mean, how did that feel when you got to that position to be able to say, I've done this for myself. I've done this and I've gotten to this spot.
It's funny, Rob. The initial reaction was, am I really like here? Like, is this really happening? Because you do have that thought, like, they're bringing the best of the best from all the services. And then, you know, I wish I could say I was recommended for that. But the truth of the matter is, a friend of mine and I saw the advertisement. It was like for a Friday, and this is like early Tuesday, and we were like, man, if we go to this interview at like 9-10 o'clock in the morning, get off, we get to screw off for the rest of the day on a Friday, was not even thinking about the real reading behind it. And then, you know, a couple of months later, I get this notification saying, congratulations, you've been accepted to the White House Communications Agency. Now it's like, oh, okay, what did I sign up for? Yeah. What is this about? And then, like you said, once I got there and I'm seeing all these high maintenance, A-type people, best of the best, it's like, okay, I need to step up my game because I definitely cannot get sent home from this, because
that's amazing.
You know, in the military, you know, most of the time your nickname is where you're from.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you get there, it's like, okay, Compton, let's see what you got inside you, Compton. Let's see if you can pick up this stuff, see if you can learn this stuff. And one of the first things I realized was, in order for me to make it in this place, I have to find somebody that's doing it right.
Oh, yeah.
So for me, mentorship, I'm always preaching that. It's like you have to find mentors regardless of what industry you want to go into, because they can truly lessen the learning curve.
Yeah.
So when I got there, you know, I humbled myself. It's like, hey, new here, I want to learn as much as I can. I want to be a sponge. Can you teach me, you know, what I need to know, even those little things? And everybody that I went to, they all like, hey, got it, no problem, follow me on my next trip, or I'll request you on my next trip.
Yeah.
And I was just at their feet, man, just watching and asking those questions, like, you know, why are we doing it this way? What happens if we don't do that, right? What's the alternative? What's the backup? And the more I started asking those questions, the better I got at my job.
How'd you find the Darrell Williams way? How'd you find, because I know you go into that position and you're like, I want to do it like how these people did it. But at the same time, you're a unique individual with a set of skills and experience. How did you find your way to do those kind of jobs?
Like, one of the best things that happened to me, one of my main mentors, his name is Steve Smith. He was a communications officer. So like in my role on the presidential side at that time, I was like a logistics coordinator. So I was in charge of the whole team from a logistics perspective, but the communications officer was responsible for everybody. And I remember doing a trip with him, and man, just a great mentor, man. He just started pouring into me early on, you know, what's my goal? What I want to get out of this?
Yeah.
And I started asking, like, you know, how can I be like the best logistics coordinator of all time? Right. It's almost like those individuals that join the NFL. He's like, I don't want to just be a running back. I want to be like,
I want to be Barry Sanders.
Exactly. Like, and
but
I really
on a winning team, right? On a winning
exactly.
team.
Exactly. Exactly. He was like, how do I get to that level? And he was like, are you sure you want to get to that level? It's going to take a lot. I'm like, I want to get to that level. And it's like everything he laid out for me, it was like, okay, I can do that. I can do that. I can do that. But then what he challenged me, Rob, was he said, everybody has a different leadership style.
Yeah.
Your job is to find out what's your style, because you can't copy everybody's style. You can copy certain traits. You can copy certain strategies.
Right.
But you have to find your own style. And that's what's going to make or break you and get people to either want to travel with you, want to support you, want to listen. Officers wanting to request you for their evaluation trips because, like, hey, I want that guy because he's good. And it was funny, man, because, you know, in the military, especially back then, a lot of people was, you know, like, my way or the highway.
Oh, by far. Yeah.
Sure. And I took a different approach. It was like, well, what if I got buy-in? Right? What if I went to Rob and said, hey, Rob, on this particular trip, I know you're the radio lead. We're going into LA here. What's some of the challenges you've read from the past trip reports? You know, what do you think we need to do differently? So I would question people, not in a sense of stump the chump.
Yeah.
But I would like ask them, like, you know, hey, man, I believe in you. Let's make this the best LA trip ever. So I would always kind of create that competitive edge where I got the buy-in early. And it really, really helped. And then the other thing that helped me out too to develop my own style was I was known as a training guy. So if there was like new equipment or somebody on a trip, like it was their first trip, I would go to that lead and say, hey, you know, what's a good day that we can do some training for your section, for your area? And they were like, oh, Tuesday will be a good time because we'll have everything set up. I said, hey, can we set up some training for your area? And then can you allow your new guy to do it so we can help build up their confidence? And they were like, you know, this is unusual at that time because normally the senior guy did those types of trainings. And I was flipping the script like, hey, but what would happen if the young guy did it and we prepped him? And it was like, you know what? We'll try it. You know, I'll be there if in case he messes up and we'll do that. So every trip I went on, it's funny, I say it now, it's like, oh, that's cool, that's cool. But trust me, when you're on the trip,
it was sweat bullets.
Miami, Florida. And you're like, man, what do we want to do this training for? We want to get out there and hit the beach. I'm like, no. We're still going to hit the beach, but let's just take, you know, just 1 hour of training and get this thing done. And after a while, like, even when people would look at the trip report, they were like, oh, man, he's on this trip. So I'm telling y'all now, you might as well be ready to do some training because he's that guy that's going to do 1 hour training no matter what.
Yeah.
But it caught on, and it was fun because I didn't put my stamp on it. It was like, hey, whatever you want, however you want to do the training, that's fine. I'm just asking, can we do 1 hour of training?
Yeah, that's all. I love that. And your imprint, obviously was a big one because after September 11th, you were selected one out of five, only five key leaders out of 30 senior level managers to direct the emergency action communications. Like, how that had to be twofold. That had to be an honor, but that had to be so stressful in that fact.
Definitely was. And the matter of fact, when I was selected, I think, I'm trying to think, we have a son. No, my son was, we were expecting, but we didn't have one. But at that time, I was like, man, I got a good gig going.
Yeah.
Travel amongst those 30 people. Because at this time, now I transitioned. So instead of traveling on the presidential side, you know, went to Korea for a year, then they brought me back to the White House Communications Agency. And now this time I'm traveling as the vice presidential communication officer. So now I'm like those communication officers on the presidential side. I'm running the whole show for Vice President Gore and eventually Vice President Cheney. So when 9/11 happened, those that remember the story, President Bush was in an elementary school in Florida and they had told him to stay put because they didn't know what was going on. And Vice President Cheney was calling shots, you know, until they figured out what was going on. And after that, a lot of agencies were like, hey, all of our, you know, strategies and plans are laid out to the vice president moving up and to become the president. But what do we do? The vice president needs those type of assets.
Yeah.
And he's not moving up. So that's what kind of caused us to go to that training. And then it was amazing because when I got the call, like, hey, congratulations, you know, you've been selected. And I actually turned it down, Rob. I was like, oh, really? Man, I appreciate it. I did. I said, I appreciate it. But, you know, go ahead and pick, you know, number six or number seven on the list because I'm okay. And a lot of people were like, why did you do something like that? And I was like, well, one, I mean, in my mind, it was people that was just as talented as I was. It was people that really, really wanted to fly on Air Force Two. And to me, it was like, I'm okay, right? Because I knew all the stuff that was going to come with that, right?
Yeah.
Like you just said, the pressure.
A lot of baggage.
Birthdays, missing, you know, important events. And I was like, no, I'm okay. You know, I don't have to have that. And again, my mentor was like, hey, I hear what you're saying. He said, the very reason that you don't want to do it is why you got picked. Because one, you don't look for the spotlight. Never take credit for anything. You always say it's your team. And you never lowered, you know, your authority over anybody, right?
Right.
And they're like, we need somebody like that because we don't want anybody on this plane that's going to have the big head. Because if you do that, then you're not going to be an effective leader.
Right.
People are going to hate you when you come into their trip site. And I definitely didn't want to do that. So it was funny. He was like, hey, just give me, what did he say? Give me 90 days. And then we'll kind of re-talk this thing, right? And four years later, I'm still doing the gig. And it turned out to be really fun.
That's awesome.
But like you said, it was a lot of pressure, definitely a lot of stress. It was one of those jobs where I always tell people, it's like you're on this merry-go-round and you don't know that you can get off of it until you actually get off. And then when you get off of it, you're like, holy smoke, that was crazy. Why did I stay on that merry-go-round for so long? I should have got off a little bit earlier, but your priorities are kind of set where it's like, I need to do this job. I need to do it well. I need to make sure that I do it well enough where the people that come from after me, right, they kind of know what a blueprint looks like.
Now, how did it feel to be one of those, you know, you came from Compton. How does it feel to be one of those individuals that, you know, kids that are living in Compton or in other circumstances like you were, how does it feel to be that mentor of saying, hey, don't shoot for just outside of your county, shoot for the stars because it is possible?
That was probably the most rewarding part of the job because like when I was on the presidential side, President Clinton used to go to LA a lot, right? Yeah. And since I was from Los Angeles, you know, grew up in Compton, a lot of my peers did not like to do the West Coast trips, right? So a lot of it, you had the 5-hour flight, 3-hour time difference. So they were like, Darrell, you can have every West Coast LA trip. We don't want it. You know, we like the smaller trips or the East Coast or Midwest trips. So the cool part, when I knew I was going to LA, I had this really tough teacher named Ms. Ferguson. And I would call her because she was one of the reasons I joined the Army because she, you know, taught me how to type and all that good stuff.
Oh, wow.
So I would call her and say, hey, Ms. Ferguson, I'm coming to L.A. I'm sure one of the days I'm going to have time to break away. What's a good day to come and talk to your students? And that was like just the most rewarding thing, Rob, because I'm going to a place where I sat where they sat, right? I didn't know, you know, what the future could look like, or all you know at that time was, you know, sports figures, rappers, right? Those type of guys, actors, things like that. But now to go back and say, hey, here's this other industry that you can join. So not only just joining the military, But you can also work in what we call special assignments, you know, and get assigned to places like the Pentagon or the White House or, you know, those types of agencies. It was the best because a lot of those guys, they didn't know that those type of things existed.
Right.
And it was so funny. I was with Ferguson. I was sitting there back then. You know, we had all these pictures of the White House and they would give them to us, right? Because the photo production, like it would be like one little mistake on there that you and I would never be able to see.
So true.
They would see it.
Yeah.
And they would say, nope, we can't put this out there. And they would have stacks of just different types of photos of the White House. And they were like, had on the table, like, you can come and pick these up because all we're going to do is throw them away. So I would send Miss Ferguson these pictures. And she'd have them against her wall. And she would always tell me, like, yeah, these guys keep thinking that, or the students rather, you know, that I'm just getting these pictures out of magazines and I don't know anybody that works at the White House. So, yeah, I definitely need you to come here and talk to these knuckleheads so they can understand that I do know somebody. So that was one of the most rewarding things. Being able to fly back to LA and go to the schools and talk to the students.
That's so awesome. And now you even have your own coaching, Alliance Seminars Seminars Coaching, that veteran-owned, faith-based organization. Talk to me more about the reason why you started this, because it had to be something that was deep in your passion. It had to be that purpose that drives you. Tell me more about Alliance Seminars Coaching.
Sure, Rob. So I always tell people the life that I've already lived, I mean, I could have never imagined. Like the highest of the highs, you know, getting off Air Force Two and people like, can I carry your bags? And you're feeling like, no, please don't carry my bag. I'm just a regular guy that's fortunate enough to be. And they're like, I know, but we got to carry your bags, right? So, you know, to be able to live that type of life and, like I always say, to go from the hood to the house straight out of Compton, like,
is that your book?
It is coming. Yes, it is.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
It is coming. And so to live that type of life and to have those type of things, like, I have to pay it forward. Like, I just cannot, you know, keep those lessons that I learned about leadership and how to lead teams and how to motivate teams. So one of the things my wife and I were talking, you know, like when you retire out the military, it's like, okay, now you want to do what you love to do and not what you have to do.
Right.
And again, talking to my mentor, and he's asking me and challenging me, like, no, what do you really want to do? Like, no kidding. If you money wasn't an option, like, what is it you want to do? And I was like, I want to train people. I want to show people how they can reach their potential. There's different ways to do it. And he was like, so do that.
Yeah.
And my wife and I started because I was like, hey, I'll work with the men, you work with the women. And definitely one of the most rewarding things to be able to coach somebody that feels stuck or wants to change directions in their careers, but may not know how to do it. And then to be able to talk to somebody, like, you know, when they see the website, they're like, oh, okay, this guy's actually accomplished some things. And I always tell people, you know, all the awards, all the accomplishments, really what it comes down to, it just means that I can help you in different ways. That's all that means. Because the bottom line is, that stuff is going to get thrown away eventually.
And it's dust.
Exactly. So, you know, how can I help you fulfill whatever it is that you want to fulfill in your life? And that's, again, another one of those fun moments, because now I get to help adults, just like I used to help children. Now I'm helping adults, you know, realize that they can get to whatever it is that they want to get to. Now it's going to take some possible shifts and mindset changes, but the fact that they realize they can do it, it's amazing. I remember working with a person last year at that, their particular job. Their mindset, Rob, was people like me don't get those type of opportunities. They don't go and get selected for competitive programs and things like that. And I was like, well, let's work on this for about a year, and then let's see where we are. And then right toward the end of the year, able to coach that person, and they got selected for one of those competitive programs, right? And to see the exit survey on that, you know, from that person saying, you know, in writing, you don't understand what you did for me, right? I could never imagine myself being selected for something like this, because I thought that was for other people. I didn't think, you know, introverted people like me could receive those types of opportunities. So to get those types of exit surveys and things like that, it's like, yeah, this is the right decision.
Man, that's powerful. That's powerful. And it all culminates from that experience that you gained and that courage, like I was talking about before, that drive that you have. Make sure you go to allianceseminars.org. Darrell will be there for you to make sure that you find where you're supposed to go and you get there.
Absolutely.
I got three questions for you to end this podcast. Are you ready, sir?
I'm ready, sir.
All right. If you could go back to your 18-year-old self and give yourself one piece of advice, what would that be?
The one piece of advice I would tell my 18-year-old self is don't think that you have to do it by yourself. Ooh, it's okay to ask for help, right? A lot of times, you know, you see somebody successful, you see Fireman Rob with his podcast, and you're like, okay, I want to do like Fireman Rob. It's like, okay, but it's okay to ask Fireman Rob, hey, what equipment did you know to use? How did you know what type of equipment? What platform? It's like, so for some reason, we think like, oh, no, I need to figure this out by myself because that's how Rob did it. You're just assuming that that's how Rob did it, but you don't know how he really did it. So it's okay to ask for help. It's not a sign of weakness, especially for men, man. We let pride get in the way so much.
Yes.
It's like, put the pride down and just ask somebody. It's not a big deal.
That's so true. That works good for my 18-year-old self and my 45-year-old self. All right. So everybody has challenges and struggles in their life, and they're going through these. What would two habits that you tell them to start to incorporate into their life to continue to move forward, to continue to drive forward towards those dreams?
Two habits that definitely helped me that I think could help other people. It's one, you want to develop discipline within yourself, because people don't realize discipline plays a big role. And anybody that's been successful in anything, you start peeling back the layers of, okay, how did they get there? It was a discipline.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about discipline, it doesn't cost anything. Huh. Everybody can develop it. It just takes time and commitment. So definitely the discipline to do whatever it is that you want to do in the future. And then the second thing is integrity.
Yeah,
I found that the people that have integrity tend to do things at a higher level. And one thing about integrity I found out is when you do make a mistake, people tend to give you a little bit more grace than that shady guy that's always trying to, you know, get over on somebody. And,
yeah.
Cut corners and things like that. It's like, no, integrity goes a long, long way.
I love that. All right. This last one's always fun. Mm-hmm. If you could have coffee with three individuals at a firehouse table. So in other words, all questions are on the table, answers, everything, and they can be deceased or alive. Mm-hmm. Who would those three people be?
Man, great question. I love that, Rob. Three people to sit down with and ask questions, have coffee. Definitely one would be Kobe Bryant.
Oh, man, that's a good
one. And the reason I say that, because a lot of people talked about him because he was trying to be like Michael Jordan and all that good stuff. But the fact that people don't realize the work ethic that he put in to trying to be the best. You know, it's like, you know, what drove him to do that? Because he could have easily rested on his laurels, but he just had a different mindset. I think the other person, I really would like to talk to Barry Sanders, because even though I'm a Raiders fan, I mean, Marcus Allen would be up there too, but it was just something about how do you perform the way he performed, knowing that you're pretty much probably going to lose.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
I mean, you're not going to the playoffs.
Nope.
You're not going to get more help.
Nope.
But every week, this guy brought his best to the table. And just what drove that? Because anybody else is like, I'm out of here.
Oh,
I'm quitting. Yeah. But he just never did that, man.
It was unreal.
Exactly, right? So definitely Kobe Bryant, Barry Sanders. And then I think the other person I would want to speak to would more than likely be probably John Maxwell.
Oh, wow.
Because I love all of his books. Yeah. And he's great at the sharing and things, but just to talk to him about those early days, like, how did you know, John, that you had something going there? You know what I mean? Like that right. first book, before yep. all the books, before all the trainings and the certifications, like, man, what did you realize? I know reading up about him, he said, no, he had mentors as well. And like you said earlier in that question about, you know, how did you create your own style, right? And I was wanted to ask somebody like him, like, you know, how did you even find a way to create that type of style where you became like the leadership guy? It's like what an awesome thing out of all the people in the world when you say the name John Maxwell. It's like, oh, the leadership guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Man, I mean, that's just a powerful thing for sure. So those would definitely be the three people.
That's a good table right there. I'm gonna have to sit in on that coffee talk.
definitely.
Hey, Darrell, it's been such an honor to have you on. Make sure you go to allianceseminars.org to find out more. Keep doing the things that you're doing and inspiring. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening and supporting the Forged in the Fires podcast with Fireman Rob. Remember, don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast. And please share this episode with a friend or family member. To find out more about Fireman Rob, or if you have a question, go to www.firemanrob.com. Until next time, live your life forged in the fires.